It's at the letters for Tuesday, June 4th, 2024. Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers this week, are Shoali and Nick Ondrod. Thanks so much to them for all of their effort. Ben, the Blue Jays are in some kind of state right now as we sit here on Tuesday, June the 4th. They are 28 and 31. You know, it's kind of interesting, right? Because there's the recency bias of Monday night's demoralizing defeats at the hands of the Baltimore Orioles, in which the Blue Jays were just thoroughly outclassed in their own ballpark over the 2 hours and 30 minutes of that game. But then there's also the stretch of lesser competition that they had played prior to the beginning of this Orioles series, in which the Blue Jays went 8-5 over 13 games against the White Sox and the Tigers and the Pirates of this world. So, you know, what's kind of more meaningful to you? Like, what's sitting more with you? Is it the Blue Jays going 8-5 over those 13 and now being 9-6 over their last 15, which is a .600 winning percentage? Or is it what we saw against the Orioles on Monday, which has to be fresh in your mind?
Obviously, you take something away from both. And I look at everything, obviously. To me, what's probably more representative of this team is what we saw on Monday. And even if you just look at the whole season, I'm not seeing a lot of signs here, and I don't want to just start the podcast and be like super, super negative.
Here we go again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, obviously everyone listening is a Jays fan, and probably everyone listening wants the Blue Jays to do well, and totally, totally understand that. And look, the fact is they're just not going great. And it would be a lot more fun probably for everyone involved if the Jays were like 40-26 or something, and we were talking about, you know, who they're going to be buying and all this stuff. But I can't sit here and lie, you know. I can't sit here and pretend that I think things are better than they are. So, you know, looking at this team as we've seen it this season, I just don't see this as an elite team. And we can debate, and we will debate, are they, you know, maybe good enough to justify pushing a little bit more in, and maybe they will actually be in contention for a wild card, or maybe they won't, and maybe they'll have to trade Jimmy Garcia, and we'll see. But that's like the middling team debate, you know. That's like the are you a wild card team or not debate. And you know, when you watch the Yankees or the Phillies or the Dodgers or the Orioles, there's a different level that some teams get to. And what's becoming clear to me is the Blue Jays are not in that elite tier. And, you know, obviously people listening are probably like, yeah, Ben, took you 2 months to figure that out. Like, great job. And like, yeah, please, you know, bear with us. You know, we're sometimes stating the obvious, I think, is useful. And so I understand I'm stating the obvious in that. But yeah, this is not a team that to me looks like it's equipped to go into the postseason and hit bombs and have elite bullpen pitching and have even the starting pitching that you need. So I got some questions here.
Well, yeah, I think it just is kind of obvious, right? I don't think there's a need to get super granular here, like particularly with Monday's game when like it was just so apparent and just so on the nose in the way that the Orioles beat the Blue Jays. Like, what did they do? They outslugged them. They hit more home runs than they did. They outpitched them with a pretty simple game plan of just attacking them with fastballs, and they got better bullpen performance than the Blue Jays did. I mean, like that, and that's just been the case for the entire season. Like, you look at these two teams side by side, and you know, the Baltimore Orioles have the top slugging percentage in baseball at .443. The Blue Jays are a bottom 10 team at .372. You know, the Orioles have hit 88 home runs this year. That's second in baseball. The Blue Jays have hit 51. 88-51. That ranks 25th, the Blue Jays do, in home runs hit. And then you look at the other side of the ball, and the Orioles have, you know, as a team ERA, a 3.29. And the Blue Jays have a 4.22. That's nearly a run of difference in terms of team ERA. And then there's the home runs that they're giving up as well. The Orioles below one home run per nine, 0.87 home runs per nine. That ranks sixth. The Blue Jays, 1.32 home runs per nine. That ranks 29th, second last in baseball. And these are the things that we saw play out on the field on Monday. So like, I don't know that you need to get like super into the weeds of it and of like talk about spin rates and fastballs and the areas of the zone and approaches and all this stuff. I mean, the Orioles are just slugging better. They're pitching better. They're playing better overall. And it would be one thing if it was like, okay, yeah, but, you know, that's the best team in the AL East. The Blue Jays aren't going to beat the best team in the AL East all the time out. That's the second best team in the AL East. There's a better team than this one in the Blue Jays division. It's just the simple reality of it. The Blue Jays are not on that level.
No, yeah. Like right now, the Jays are hoping and they're like telling themselves that, yeah, we can get to like a mid-tier. You know, no one is saying that the Blue Jays can compete with the Orioles and the Yankees. Even the most optimistic Blue Jays person you'll find, no one is saying that. And this is June the 4th as we record this. Division gone. Like, that's a pretty tough one. That's not where this Blue Jays franchise told everyone that they intended to be. They write it on the walls that they intend to win World Series championships. This does not look like a World Series team. And, you know, right now, they don't look like a playoff team, which is, you know, step one in that department. And to the point about the home runs, you know, looking at the Orioles lineup last night, Gunnar Henderson leading off, he has more home runs than Justin Turner and George Springer and Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette combined. You know, this is a guy who's having a great MVP-type season. And then in contrast to that, the Blue Jays do have some players having good seasons. And I would say Vladdy's one of them. You know, we talked about him last week. I think Vladdy's having a good season. Homered in that game against Baltimore. Keeps making hard contact. Played some third base. We can get to that. But, you know, this is a guy having a good season. But I think you look up and down this Blue Jays roster, there are too many guys on this team who are really far from their ceiling. And whether that's Springer or Turner or Bo or Vlad or Gausman or Jordan Romano, who's on the injured list now, or there are a lot of guys on this team who are far from their ceiling. And yeah, it's tough to win like that. And we're seeing that on a pretty consistent basis.
Yeah, so Vlad has 6 home runs. George Springer has 4, so that's 10. Bo Bichette has 4, so that's 14 combined from those 3. So as you said, Gunnar Henderson has more than that on the season. Aaron Judge hit 14 in May, right. And he plays in this division. He hit 14 in 1 month. And those 3 guys who the Blue Jays offense is built around, like 3 guys who are supposed to drive this offense, have 14 on the season. So, like, you don't have to look too deep under the hood to be like, yep, there's your problem right there. The Blue Jays bet on internal improvement this year. Like, the whole thesis of their season, the whole premise was that we will be better internally. Like, some of our players who had down years in 2023 will bounce back and will be better and do project to be better. And it's turned out to be a bad bet through 2 months. Like, you haven't seen internal improvement. You've seen, if anything, internal degradation. Like, you've actually seen George Springer have a worse year and Bo Bichette have a worse year. Kirk. And you can, like, Alejandro Kirk, put him in that conversation as well. And you can even extend this to some of the, like, more nebulous stuff, some of the stuff that it's like harder to put a number on and to quantify, the game planning stuff, the strategizing. But the Blue Jays talked about this. We want to have a clearer flow of information. We want to do a better job of preparing our hitters. We're going to make Don Mattingly the offensive coordinator. We're going to restructure like the offensive side of the coaching staff and how we do things. Well, the offense has gotten worse and I'm not as a direct result of that, but in correlation with that, like alongside that, it has gotten worse. So like that, you know, forget everything else about having Vladimir Guerrero Jr. play in third base. And, actually the problem is Daniel Vogelbach isn't playing enough, you know, like forget all these other things around the margins. Like it really is just those driving forces at the center, at the core of the Blue Jays offense that haven't been as good as they need to be for the Blue Jays to be successful.
Right. And you would also expect that, okay, if you have maybe some players from the edges of the roster step in and contribute, then that can make up for some of that, you know, underperformance. But Daniel Vogelbach, and he has been a lot better the last couple of weeks, but this is not a guy who's really saving the offense by any stretch. I mean, he's more useful than he is a transformative offensive player. Ernie Clement, never seen a pitch he doesn't want to swing at. And, you know, this is a guy who has had some good stretches and finished last year strong. But ultimately, you know, this is not a bench player who's transforming things for this team. And you look at the bullpen, especially with Jordan Romano down, and Eric Swanson optioned, there really are some weak spots in this bullpen right now. And Ryan Burr, Brennan Little, I mean, we'll see what happens there. But on nights that Jimmy Garcia and Chad Green are down, man, there are some real questions as far as how this team is going to get through some leverage moments here. So my point being, the roster is not necessarily deep enough to make up for the fact that its top players are not performing close to their ceilings.
Well, it's not like the Blue Jays made substantial adds on, the offensive side or really like the pitching side either. But, you know, Yariel Rodriguez, like, we'll see what he is over the course of his contract. Obviously, he's hurt now and he hasn't made substantial contributions to the Blue Jays at this point. Like, we'll see with him on the offensive side. I mean, Justin Turner, you know, not quite the same return on that veteran bet as he got on Brandon Belt last year. We got a good month. You know, April is great. Like, he gave the Blue Jays some really big hits in April, but pretty much as soon as the calendar turned to May, it's been a really rough go for Justin Turner, and that's the extent of what you brought in to sort of supplement what you already had. So, you know, if you weren't going to get like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, George Springer doing what you projected them to do, Alejandro Kirk as well, to your point. Yeah. Oh, Kevin Kiermaier, I guess I should throw in there as well. You kind of forget, right? He's a returning player, but he hasn't had anywhere near the season that he had last year. So it's kind of a long way of saying it wasn't a very good off season for the Blue Jays, and it's led to not a very good regular season as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, okay, as we look at this team right now, their playoff odds are right kind of between the Tigers. They're not quite as good as the Tigers' playoff odds. They're a little better than the Reds' playoff odds. So that's kind of where the Blue Jays are. I mean, it's not time to sell today. It's just, it doesn't make sense. There's no need to do that. And there's going to be a time where that decision has to be made sometime next month. It's not today. But objectively, the Jays are in a tough spot where they are climbing uphill and the climb is looking like a long one. They are not making really quick gains. I mean, I know they went 5-1 against the Pirates and the White Sox last week, but at the same time, there's so far to climb that a week like that where you go 5-1 instead of maybe the expected 4-2, it just doesn't push you that far ahead.
I'm going to say something positive here. I don't know if that's allowed. There are quite a few middling clubs in the American League in the thick of that wild card race like the Blue Jays are. Tampa Bay Rays, Texas Rangers, Houston Astros, Boston Red Sox, Detroit Tigers. You know, these are all teams that have been fairly mid this year, either at or a game above or a game below 500, right around there. We have to be open-minded to the possibility that over the rest of June, and look, we've only seen one game of this Orioles series, so for all we know, the Blue Jays might win the next three in a row. I'm not betting on it, but for all we know, even if they split that series and then go take 2-3 versus Oakland or even sweep Oakland and then play well through, or at least, you know, a little bit like kind of like that 540-550 ish range for the rest of the month, hang around there, get back to 500, even a game or two above, a couple of those other middling teams blend away, a couple of them stay middling. It is possible that the Blue Jays reach July and are like, hey, we're like, I don't know, three and a half, four games out of the third wild card spot. Like, maybe it is possible that we could take a run at this. Don't think it would be a very aggressive buy. I don't think it would be like going out and selling the farm to, you know, bring in whoever the marquee names are who are available. But there is a scenario that is possible and that we must remain open-minded to, that, you know, circumstances could look good for the Blue Jays towards the end of June if they play better and if some of those other teams around them, like kind of in this like melee in the American League wildcard race, drop off.
Of course, I think that's totally fair, and the way you lay it out, that's not unreasonable in any way. And yet, to be kind of hoping that you can play well enough to be only three games out of the third wildcard spot in June, like, man, it is yeah, it's telling. And that would be a lot better than where they are right now. So that would be a good month for the Blue Jays if they can pass a couple of those teams, get to 500. That honestly would be, considering that they play a lot of really tough teams this month. It speaks to the struggles that they've had so far this season. And this roster has real problems. And that's, talking about the closer being down, fifth starter being down, and an offense that, look, the offense has been good in the last month, but even then, they still don't hit home runs. This is still basically a singles and walks team, even when they're going well. So we've not seen them hit home runs all season long. Just doesn't seem to be something in their wheelhouse. And clearly, that is the most important thing in baseball. It's the best possible outcome. You know, it's not everything you can win without hitting home runs, but it is so much easier to win games if you're hitting home runs and not allowing them. And the Blue Jays just have a problem on both sides of that equation.
Well, especially in 2024, when pitchers are nastier than ever, when the average fastball in MLB is higher than it's ever been, as long as we've tracked these things, you know, where you're seeing like a Corbin Burns on Tuesday night, like the Blue Jays will, who like doesn't, it's pretty tough to string together hits against that guy. Like it's, you're kind of hoping for like an error, a bloop, and a blast, right? Like that's how you kind of get some runs on the board against a pitcher of that quality. It's kind of funny, right? Because you mentioned, you know, well, the Blue Jays are in a tough spot because their closers hurt and, you know, their fifth starters hurt. Like they don't really have a solution there. Well, you can look across the field tonight and see an Orioles team who Felix Bautista is hurt, and they just lost Tyler Wells and John Means to you know, elbow procedures in the same week. Dean Kramer's been out however long he's been out, and the Orioles are figuring out and they're putting it together because they're hitting a ton of home runs.
Even look at Atlanta, right? They lost arguably the best pitcher and the best position player in baseball. They're still going to contend. They still might win the World Series. Like it cannot be an excuse.
No, like the problems the Blue Jays are confronting right now are problems that like every team confronts. Like the Blue Jays have had pretty spectacular health and durability from their starting rotation for a couple of years now. So, you know, a lot of teams have dealt with, like, look at the Rays. If you want to talk about starting pitcher injuries, right? You know, for the Blue Jays to just now be dealing with, like, you know, we'll see how serious the injury is with Jordan Romano, but, you know, having to be without like a higher leverage reliever at the back end of their bullpen, I can't, like, 29 other teams have dealt with something like that over the last, you know, calendar year, right? Like the Blue Jays don't have a position player on the IL right now that I'm aware of, right? Like you got Manoa, Yariel Rodriguez, and Jordan Romano. Like that's your IL list for the Blue Jays. They have every position player healthy and available. Like how many teams, right?
Yeah.
Every position player on their 40, like or their 26. There might be somebody in the minors who's on the 40 who's on the IL. I haven't gone that deep into it, but every position player on the 26, like what team in baseball can say this, right? Like, you know, these have, you know, having to play a tough schedule, like, you know, some of the, you know, having tough road trips and a lot of games and a lot of days without off days. Like this is stuff that, you know, 30 teams deal with. There's really nothing exceptional about some of the challenges the Blue Jays are facing right now.
Yeah, it's a tough sport, and it's tough for the Miami Marlins too. And if the Marlins podcasters right now are talking about, yeah, this is a tough, it's really tough for the Marlins, like, I believe it, but, you know, they're not going to win the World Series anytime soon. So, you know, what do you want me to say? Look, as much as we're talking about wild card, wild card, wild card, this goal needs to be, should be, is to win World Series. And they just don't look close to that right now. And I mean, again, I know I'm saying that's so, so obvious. I know for anyone who's watched this team, but it's just worth reminding, like, the goal is not to sneak in as a third wild card. The goal is to win a World Series, to get some buys, to be there, to be the team that the Yankees are scared of, to be the team that the Orioles are scared of. And, like, honestly, who's scared of this Blue Jays team right now? I don't see it. Doesn't mean, you know, the season's not over, and it's, you know, it's still fascinating on a lot of levels. It's still challenging, you know, just like it is for the Marlins or the Rockies or the White Sox, but yeah, it's the goal is to win, not just to face adversity, but to overcome it and to do it against the best teams. And right now that's not happening.
If you do get to the playoffs and you do sneak in as a third wild card, like hitting home runs becomes even more important in the playoffs. Yeah. Like the percentage of runs scored via home run goes up significantly from where it is in the regular season, because it becomes even harder to string hits together than it is in the regular season, like for a lot of reasons, right? Like the game planning is like a lot more intense and focused, you know, like I think the conviction and the mentality and focus of players is heightened. Any kind of fifth starter or like middling average pitcher isn't on a mound. Like, teams just don't throw bad pitchers in the postseason because they have good pitchers that got there, and all of their fifth starters, and in many cases their fourth starters, have been shifted to bullpen roles, right? So you're not going to run into like the Albert Suarez, who the, you know, this like journeyman guy, you know, who was in Korea a couple of years ago that the Orioles are throwing right now because they've had injuries in their starting rotation. Like, you're not going to run into those guys.
You're saying Nick Mastrini's not going to be making ALCS starts? Is this what you're telling me here?
That's the thing. So you've got to find a way to hit more home runs if you're the Blue Jays. Like, if you're going to obviously do well in the regular season, but particularly do well in the postseason. And it's going to be tough against Corbin Burnes, by the way, who I was just quickly looked it up because I was thinking about, you know, how I said the Blue Jays are going to need to hit home runs against Corbin Burnes to beat him. He hasn't allowed a homer in five straight starts. So the last time he allowed a homer was 32 innings ago. It was May 1st. It's been a month since he allowed a homer. So I don't know. Maybe the Blue Jays actually aren't going to win the next three games of this series. We'll see.
This is where, for the Blue Jays, like, it's a challenge because, to put it mildly, because on some level, they're aware of this. They know they haven't played well. They know, and you'll hear this from players, they know there's not much time to waste. They have to start performing now. There's real frustration that we can see from these players. I mean, Bo Bichette in the dugout recently, like, he looked pretty dejected at one point. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa comes over and kind of consoles him, says, hey, like, we're going to, you know, we'll keep at him. Like, we're going to turn this around. And that's the attitude you have to have, and good for IKF in that moment. And, you know, as for Bo, it's just part of the season. Of course, frustration is a natural response in that situation. But, you know, not only do they have to win, but they have to win now in the face of that frustration. So there's also the mental game to this, and that's going to, it's not going to make things easier, knowing that the fan base is frustrated, knowing that they themselves are not performing to their full potential.
None of this is for like a lack of care or a lack of effort, like a lack of work, a lack of determination. Like, this is a group that cares a lot. This is a group that works really, really hard. Like, you mentioned it, we saw the emotion from Bo Bichette. Like, that is a guy who's just like as intense about his career as a baseball player as anybody who you're gonna meet. Like, you've got veterans on this team who are like, I gotta win now. Like, this is my time now to, like, this is why I came to this team as a Chris Bassitt or a Kevin Gausman. Like, Justin Turner, like, people will tell you, like, he wasn't going to a team this year, like in his free agency last offseason, that wasn't position to win, that like wasn't trying to win. He was like only going to join a team that was going to go to the postseason and that was trying to like build a postseason contender roster. You can look at like the hard work side of it. Like, you know this as well as I do, Ben. Like, every time that we get to the ballpark and we walk by the Blue Jays like indoor batting cages towards the clubhouse, they've got like these big windows there. You can see what's going on in there. There's always somebody working in there. I get to the ballpark some days at like 2 o'clock, there's somebody working in there. Certainly at 3 o'clock when we get into the clubhouse, often after the game, you walk by there after a loss and there's guys in there working. So like this has nothing to do with, you know, oh, they're not trying, they don't care, they're not working hard. Like, all of those boxes are checked. Like, and that's part of like the maddening thing, I think, internally for the Blue Jays is like, we feel like we're doing everything right. And we feel like, you know, this should work. Like, we are, you know, pouring ourselves into this and into trying to be better. And it's just not showing up in results on the field.
Yeah, it is worth pointing that out. And I agree completely. This group, you know, they are professional, focused, very committed to working. You look at, really up and down the roster, all parts of this team, there's a professionalism. They're showing up, they're putting in effort. Like, it's there. That part of it is there. I don't think that that's a concern at all, really. The intangibles, the desire to turn this thing around, it's there. Ultimately, that doesn't change the reality of where they are. For what that's worth, I mean, that is probably step one, or it's part of that process. You need to have it. They do have that ingredient. They just haven't been making it happen on the field.
Yeah, let's step away, and when we come back, maybe we'll get a little bit more granular and look at some more specific things with the Blue Jays, all that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson, Smith. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Shoali. Thanks so much for listening. Ben, I'm old enough to remember when you suggested during spring training that the Blue Jays should play Vladimir Guerrero Jr. more often at third base, or they should at least open up the possibility. I argued against it. You were very much in favor of it, and it seems like you have been proven right by time and by the fact that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. played third base on Sunday. Now, you also advocated recently that the Blue Jays replace Daniel Vogelbach with Spencer Horwitz, and the reason Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is playing third base is so that Daniel Vogelbach can play more often. So, you know, you take some wins, you take some L's in this game. Nobody's got a perfect record. But, you know, what do you think of finally seeing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. over there at third base starting a game for the first time since his rookie season in 2019?
Hey, you throw enough takes out there, some of them are going to be great. Some of them are going to be proven wrong. This is the beauty of it. Well, yeah, no, that's accurate. I guess with respect to those two, you could call me one for two. So, you know, I'll take that. I'm fine with that.
You're hitting 500, man.
That's right. With Vladdy at third base, I'm sure I would have said at the time, partly it's just because it is fun. And I think it's really fun to see Vlad Jr. over there at third base. He handled himself pretty well in that first game over there. First play a little awkward, but got the job done. Certainly has the arm for it.
0-2. Hit on the ground left side. Speared by Guerrero. Turns around near short. Throw to first in time. One out. What a play by Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Does open things up for the Blue Jays. I think that there is a practical value to it, especially because Justin Turner is, you know, not really someone that the Blue Jays seem comfortable playing at third base or at second base. That was probably more of a theoretical thing than something they're actually comfortable doing. And so it opens things up. You can put Turner at first, you can put Vladdy at third, get Vogelbach in there to DH. I mean, Vogelbach, to his credit, as I mentioned in the first half, like, his last couple weeks have been by far the best couple weeks of his Blue Jays career. He has hit the ball really hard, even at times that he's been making outs. He has really had some excellent contact. I mean, with all that being said, let's not go too far here because the guy has one homer. You know, he's on a pace for a 3-home-run season, so I'm not gonna trip over myself trying to say how good he is. But he has been better in the last couple weeks. He has been meaningfully better, so that's a good thing. You know, you want him in the lineup right now. You want him on the roster right now. Give him chances against right-handed pitching to make really hard contact and to hit a mistake into the seats. And yeah, if that means Vladdy plays third once a week, I think that's great.
Yeah, and he's been one of their better hitters against fastballs this season, which is something that like several Blue Jays hitters in the lineup for one reason or another have been having trouble with of late. So like Vogelbach's right up there with Vlad and with Danny Jansen as just like some of the better hitters against fastballs, like honestly the three best hitters against fastballs on this team. So I think that plays into it as well, like the way the Blue Jays are being attacked. You look at, you know, Grayson Rodriguez and the way that he used his fastball on Monday, this makes some sense. It also, you know, speaks a little bit to, like, I hate the word desperation, right? Because I don't, you know, they're not desperate. You know, I wish I had a better, like, synonym for that, but it speaks to the urgency, perhaps, which is also an overused word, like, around sports and around this team. But, you know, this is, like, the Blue Jays are taking a pretty substantial hit defensively to do this when you think about it, right? Because like it is fun to see Vlad play third base, I agree with you, and like obviously he's athletic enough to do it and he's gonna make all the routine plays. Like I'm sure he's gonna, you know, botch one or two here and there, but obviously Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is a better third baseman than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So you're taking a hit at third, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a better first baseman than Justin Turner. So you're also taking a hit at first, right? So you're weakening yourself on both corners of the infield in order to get Daniel Vogelbach's bat in the lineup because he doesn't play a position. We can even take this further and say, like, on the days that, you know, Davis Schneider isn't playing second base, he's got to be in the lineup because he's one of the few guys who's swinging it. He's your leadoff guy. So if you've got, like, Kiner-Falefa or Biggio in the lineup playing second, well, now Davis Schneider's got to go out to left, and you can only have one of Kiermaier or Varsho playing center. So you've now also weakened yourself in the outfield as well. So like for a team like the Blue Jays that's put such a value, like such a premium on defense over the last season and 2 months, like I think this is actually a pretty significant move for them to take.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, they are definitely a worse defensive team on those days, as you've outlined. And it's the trade-off. Do you try to swing a little bit back in the direction of offense? Obviously, a couple of years ago, they had that big offensive team. Then they went more in the direction of defense with Varsho and Kiermaier. You know, we saw how that played out last year and for the first part of this year. One way or another, you're not going to make change for the sake of change, but you're going to make change if you think that it can help win. And I think against certain pitchers, if you believe that, you know, both Vogelbach and Turner are worthy of being in the lineup, then it makes sense. Or here's another thought. Like, I don't know, like Justin Turner, it's been a rough 5 weeks now, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, could that be Spencer Horwitz at first base and Vogelbach at DH? And I don't know what would have to happen, you know, exactly what configuration that would look like. But Horwitz keeps going off, and he's a guy who could play first. You know, maybe it's not quite as much of a downgrade there. So you have a solid first baseman. Vladdy goes over, plays third, and you have Vogelbach at DH in that scenario. Like, that's another one that I would consider because, you know, Justin Turner, I don't know. I just think we're at a point now where for him, I don't know that you need to be getting him in the lineup 6 days a week. I mean, if he's hitting four times a week, I think that's totally fine.
Yeah, I think like at minimum, you could run a platoon at DH with him and Vogelbach. Turner goes against the lefties, Vogelbach goes against the righties. Turner is 5 for his last 60 since May the 8th, so nearly a month, not quite a month, like 4 days shy of a month. He is hitting .083. That is the lowest batting average of any player in baseball to make at least 65 plate appearances. It has been a rough go for him. What I wonder, and like Spencer Horwitz, I mean, just every night, it's, you know, he's doing something incredible. His numbers on the year speak for themselves. On the weekend, he had like a 5-hit night where he had like 2 balls that were 107 plus, you know, a homer, a couple doubles. He like legged out an infield single. He returns the next day, hits another homer, playing second base because the Blue Jays are like, man, could we get you a position like somewhere other than first base? Like, I think Spencer Horwitz can help if and when he comes up. I certainly do not think the expectations of him should be he's going to save this offense and he's going to like power it. He's going to save this season. You know, I think that that would be wholly unfair and unrealistic, but yeah, I certainly think he can help. What I kind of wonder and what I'll pose to you is like, is it possible to have a 13 person position player roster that has all of Turner, Vogelbach, Vlad, and Horwitz? Like, can you make that work? Or is that just you know, not tenable going forward?
It's, did you say Kirk too in that mix?
Oh, yeah, I didn't, but I should have.
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's, you're not going to lead the league in versatility when you do that. Honestly, man, I would do it. Like, I would option Clement. No, he's out of options. We talked about that all spring. I would.
You can option Biggio. You can DFA Clement.
Does Clement have a sore calf, though? Like, maybe he goes on the IL. I don't know. I would think about, yeah, you don't want to DFA Clement, but at the same time, if Clement had options, let's put it this way. If Clement had options, I would much rather have Spencer Horwitz up right now. And I know you're taking a hit defensively, but you still have a backup shortstop in IKF, you know, in case Bo had to come out of a game for some reason. Vladdy now is playing third. Horwitz has moved around a little bit, so those guys are not zeros defensively. In a pinch, you could obviously put Turner at third or at second. It's not going to be a good defensive configuration. You're not going to have quite the same flexibility, but you got to score runs. And I think that Horwitz would give you a better at bat than Ernie Clement.
We are getting to the point in the season where you're seeing teams make quote unquote tough decisions on, you know, players that you would consider to be big leaguers. Like Avisail Garcia got designated for assignment today. Edouard Julien got optioned. Spencer Torkelson, right? Got optioned. Like, you are seeing teams, you are seeing other markets where they've like had players who they're like, just give it some time. He deserves some runway, right? He's earned some rope. Like, he, you know, we ought to see this thing through. Kind of swallow some bitter pills, right? And so like the Blue Jays aren't exempt from that. Like, they can make that move. Like, there are meritocratic reasons if you were like yep, we're going to move on from pick your, you know, struggling player at the bottom of the Blue Jays roster, whether it's a Clement or a Biggio or a Turner, right? Like, we're going to option somebody, we're going to DFA somebody, and we're going to give Spencer Horwitz, we're going to give Spencer Horwitz some run, you know, or we're going to see Az and Barger again. Like, I don't think it's Aroldis Martinez at this time, because like, he's 22, he's still developing defensively. Like, it's not going to play at the big league level, but Nathan Lucas, you know, like, there are other options internally that the Blue Jays could give a look here. And I don't know, maybe like the move in Vlad to third base is a bit of a sign that like, yep, we're going to start doing some dramatic stuff here to like take one last push at this season being a competitive one, at us avoiding having to sell at the trade deadline. Like, we're going to just kind of fire every last bullet that we have here to see if we can make something of this.
And to be honest, like, you know what, if you have to DFA Ernie Clement to do that, I think that's okay. Like, I think that, I'm not saying you want to do it, but end of the day, you've got to find ways to get good players onto your team, good hitters onto your team. This team is not scoring enough runs. They could use more offensive depth. Spencer Horwitz is really hitting. Yeah, like, I would find a way to do that. And I don't think that you need to play scared when it comes to losing Ernie Clement. He would get claimed, I think. Someone else would take him. He's worthy of a major league roster spot, but you know what? You gotta find ways to win, and I just think offensively, he's not necessarily giving you a lot this year.
Spencer Horwitz turns 27 in November. That's not really a prospect anymore. That's just kind of what he is. You know, I mean, like, the OPS is like up over 900. Like, the OBP is close to 500. Like, he's leading the International League in hits. He's leading it in doubles. He's like top three in walks and line drive rate. I don't know what more he needs to do to earn himself a chance to contribute at the big league level. And yeah, you know, maybe we're getting close to that being something the Blue Jays do. What's interesting, as just to kind of tie a bow on the Vlad playing third base thing, how nonchalant Vlad is about it. Like, when this came out on Sunday, Shai and I kind of went to talk to him about it in the Jays clubhouse Sunday morning, and he wasn't like dismissive, like he wasn't rude, he wasn't like, I'm not saying that, but there was very much an air of like, why are you even asking me about this? Like, what, this isn't a thing. I don't, it's fine. Like, they wanted me to play third, so I'm going to play third for the first time in however many years. He had four innings since at third base since 2019 in like emergency situations. He's like, yeah, it's not a big deal, whatever. Yeah, I take ground balls at third base like all off season. I take ground balls regularly throughout the regular season. When I switched glove sponsors, I was like, don't only send me the first base gloves, like, send me the third base glove as well. Like, Vlad could not have been more, like, I guess, unmoved by it. Like, it wasn't like a situation of like, oh man, how am I gonna do this? Gonna have to relearn to play how to play this position, and you know, it's gonna put a bunch of pressure on me and all this. It was just so nonchalant, and so like, he was like, why are people talking about this? Like, why is this a topic? I don't understand. So I just kind of thought like, that was cool, and that says something about his personality. Like, he is very easygoing and very like adaptable, and a guy who honestly like just has a lot of fun when he's on the field. And I think that he thinks right now playing third base regularly is just like a fun thing that he's going to get to do once every 7 days.
He's certainly capable of it. I mean, we see it all the time. I'm sure in our spring training discussion about this, we would have mentioned that Vladdy takes ground balls at third base in spring. He'll do it regularly during the regular season. And sometimes those are hard hit ground balls off the bat of someone like Gil Kim or one of the Blue Jays coaches trying to replicate something close to game speed and make that full throw across the diamond, throw over to second base, practice throwing home, all those different things that might come up in the course of a game to make sure that he's ready just in case. And it's the same reason you'll see Daniel Vogelbach take ground balls at first base. Alejandro Kirk sometimes takes ground balls at first. You know, we see some different things. Turner will be over at second. You know, this is just kind of par for the course for these players. And Vladdy in particular, 100%, likes to have fun, does have fun out there. Probably would be having more fun if the Blue Jays were winning. But I think his attitude here is good and probably helps the Blue Jays. Probably helps his trade value. Not that they're going to trade him, but it's a good thing to have that kind of flexibility.
Jose Perrios probably ought to take some ground balls at shortstop.
Sure.
Now that I think of it, right? When you think about it, like if you had a game where it's like you didn't have Bo and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa got hurt and, you know, Ernie Clement had been in and out of the game, Jose Berríos wouldn't be a bad option at shortstop.
Oh, defensively? I bet he'd be really good.
Right? I mean,
he's done it before. He did it growing up.
Yeah. No, he played shortstop all the way up until his senior year of high school. And like he wanted to be a shortstop. He loved playing shortstop. There was like two issues. Number one, couldn't really hit. And number two, he played on the same team as Carlos Correa. And his coach was like, you know, I've got a really good shortstop. This Correa kid seems like he has a future. You're not really hitting, but you have like the biggest infield arm on the team. Why don't you pitch for us? And so then that, like, Jose Berríos at the age of 17 was like, okay, I'll be a pitcher now. I'd say that was a pretty good decision on his part. But you see it whenever a ball is hit back towards him. Like, he is a shortstop in pitcher's clothing. And, like, so if he had to play shortstop in a big league game for the Blue Jays in, like, the 13th inning or something, I honestly don't think it would be atrocious. Like, I actually think he would be playable. He'd be playable there, I think.
I think he would be, like... Yeah, playable is a good word for it. I mean, the shortstop is where a lot of the best athletes in the sport go. So to be an average major league shortstop is really tough. I'm not saying that he would just drop in there and be an average major league shortstop, but he would not embarrass himself. He is a great athlete, great mobility, obviously has the arm strength to do it. So yeah, I think he would pull it off very smoothly.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like who's, you know, like he'd be better than Paul DeJong, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or at least as good. I mean,
yeah.
Paul DeJong is not an exceptional defensive shortstop.
No. I honestly, I think Berríos would be very smooth out there. I mean, look, Paul DeJong's done it for years. That's where I kind of pause with it. It's like it's a position where, like anything, there are little intricacies to it. You know, are you running to the right spot? Do you know the arm strength of the outfielders? Who's covering the base on a throw down to second base? Like, those are things that Paul DeJong would know intimately and be very smooth with in a way that Berríos would not. But I think as far as athleticism, as far as arm strength, Berríos could do it.
Paul DeJong, -4 DRS this year. That is the third lowest in baseball. The second lowest in baseball, Bo Bichette, -5. The lowest in baseball, Blaise Alexander at -6.
Good thing Bichette's hitting so well. Oh,
these
man.
Are
it is, yeah.
Just some statistics tough. That I'm reading.
Yeah, it's honestly tough. And, you know, yeah, it's... this is a guy who's been so much a part of these good Blue Jays teams. He's done so many good things for this team in recent years, and these last 2 months have just not been it for Bo Bichette.
No. No, it has not. Speaking of struggles, the Blue Jays struggling to find a fifth starter within their organization. It's so interesting. Like, you come into this season, and you and I are talking about how they actually have like much better starting pitching depth than they've had in a while. You know, like Alec Manoah is going to start on the IL, but then he's going to be an option for them. And you've got a Wes Parsons over here and a Mitch White over there. And, you know, Chad Dallas is, you know, doing some interesting things, and he's going to start at AAA. And hey, Ricky Tiedemann is going to be at AAA getting stretched out. And like, he's got better stuff than just about anybody in the organization. And now, like, all of those options are just kiboshed. They're all gone. And the Blue Jays are in a point where here on Tuesday night, we're recording this Tuesday afternoon, they're going to be starting Trevor Richards. And this is the Blue Jays' best option at number 5 in their rotation for the time being. What I'm curious about, Ben, is just how sustainable this is. Like, how long can they have a Richards Francis number 5 starter going forward, just considering the toll that puts on the rest of the bullpen and the rest of your starting staff?
Yeah, it's not sustainable. I think that's clear. We saw that last year. It just didn't work for... It actually kind of did work, but you couldn't have done it for more than a month. And so at a certain point, it's probably going to reach an expiration. Now, you can do it for a couple starts. So to do it against the Orioles once when you just haven't had time to fully sort things out, with respect to that final rotation spot, no problem. And we do know that Yuriel Rodriguez is building up into a multi-inning role toward 50 pitches, so that would put you about 3 innings for Rodriguez. And at that point, maybe the tandem is more Bowden Francis and Yuriel Rodriguez. which not ideal, but kind of takes less of a toll on the rest of the pitching staff. Because here's the other thing about Trevor Richards. So he's going to start Tuesday, which again, kind of makes sense. The first inning is a high leverage inning. The Orioles have left-handed hitters and switch hitters up at the top that change up plays against lefties and righties. So he can give you an inning, maybe two innings against Baltimore. That makes sense. But let's say Jimmy Garcia goes 2 days in a row. Chad Green's your closer. Well, Trevor Richards might be your setup man in that situation, along with Nate Pearson, because the Blue Jays do not have an abundance of trusted late-inning relief options. So at a time that Jordan Romano is also down, you kind of have to push guys into bigger roles than you might be fully comfortable doing. And that includes Trevor Richards. And he can't do both at once. You can do either as a starter or as a reliever in the late innings, but it's impossible to do them both.
Yeah, and in either of these scenarios, whether it's Richards Francis or Rodriguez Francis, like you're still using two roster spots for one job, and that is your fifth starter. And I agree, like Trevor Richards is really valuable to this team as a late inning reliever right now. Like you don't want him, you know, starting games regularly. But even if you bring in, you know, Rodriguez to pair with Francis, well, another reliever is exiting your bullpen to make room for Rodriguez on the roster. And now, like in the day prior to that Rodriguez Francis start, I mean 2 days prior as well, really, like you got a one less reliever in your bullpen they're using. And if you are in a week where you've had to use your bullpen a lot, where, you know, Kevin Gausman's pitch count got run up early in a game, or you know, Yusei Kikuchi, like, just, you know, got bled to death with some, you know, soft contact and gave up a couple bombs and was out early, and you had to use a lot of your bullpen, like you're in a tough position there as well. And I just don't think that Rodriguez is a guy coming off of what he, you know, has done over the last couple of years. Last year, not pitching competitively at all, and then being a reliever in Japan for the 2 years prior. It's not a guy that the Blue Jays are going to extend to like 100 pitches. It's not a guy who's regularly going to be throwing five innings. Bowden Francis, not that guy either. We'll see what the news is on Alek Manoah on Thursday, but yeah, he's not expecting him back anytime soon. So it's going to be a bit of an awkward fit going forward for the Blue Jays, because I don't see another option emerging as a fifth starter from within.
That's the thing. And if you're the Jays, look, who knows, maybe they get surprisingly good news, in which case awesome, but you kind of have to mentally be preparing as though it's at least a couple months for Alek Manoah. I mean, I think that's probably putting it safely. So, you know, if that's a couple months absence, then it's like you say, who is that person who is going to step up and be ready to give you that traditional workload? Probably not there. Does that mean you kind of look to the waiver wire? I mean, Mitch White's out there. You could put a claim in.
They outrighted him.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of caliber of pitcher that is available. It's going to require some creativity. Ideally, this is where someone steps up, but it's a lot to ask. This is where the depth of your 40-man roster can really make a difference, because those players can either distinguish themselves as guys who can hold their own, or they will struggle and this team's record will head in the wrong direction.
I actually haven't checked because I know it would have been Mitch's second outright, so he'd have to accept it. So it's possible he's actually about to become a free agent. So he may be available to you.
Well, he won't sign him. Not to me. This is not my team. But you know, he may be available to the Toronto Blue Jays.
In the meantime, at the back end as well, like you do have some questions without Jordan Romano being available. Like he just got his second anti-inflammatory shot of the season for, you know, the second battle with elbow inflammation that he's had this year. And you know, I haven't like pulled it up, but I remember it being somewhere around a month that he was like missing first time.
It was March 19th to April 16th.
Right. So a month. So it's fair to expect like you're not going to have Jordan Romano for the next 3.5 weeks. Yeah. Jimmy Garcia is a closer. He's got closer stuff. He's actually got a starter's arsenal, but just throws it all really hard with a ton of break and moves it around the zone and locates well. So like he slides right into the ninth inning there. But like Chad Green has been shaky at times, has had his own physical issues this year. Obviously, like the two lefties in the bullpen have been inconsistent, and Tim Meza and Yenesis Cabrera. Nate Pearson's has moments. Slider's looking really good. It's helping the fastball play up. Like you hope that he can continue to sustain and build on this momentum. Zach Pop has had flashes, but I mean, there's, you know, there aren't obvious candidates for, like, we, you know, it's a day when Jimmy Garcia is unavailable because he pitched back to back and Chad Green's our closer. Who's going to pitch in the eighth? You know, who's going to protect this tight lead in the seventh? Like, there aren't many slam dunk choices for John Schneider and Pete Walker when they look out there.
Right. And, you know, especially from the left side. And you look at this Blue Jays bullpen collectively, their strikeout rate is 27th in, it's either 27th or 28th. In Major League Baseball, as far as strikeout percentage, way too low. Set aside the home run issues, those might normalize a little bit. The strikeout issues, it's hard to just say, yeah, that's going to turn around. They're not getting enough strikeouts. And if they do become buyers, I think it's pretty clear they would be looking for some sort of high strikeout relief arm. A long way from that. We'll see where that all goes. But in the meantime, they do have, I think, questions, especially as far as lefty relief. And I will say, to give the Blue Jays credit, to give a couple of their pitchers credit, in that 14-inning game on Friday against the Pirates, Yennesis Cabrera and Tim Mayza both pitched very, very well. Those were some of their better outings of the season.
Cabrera trying to send us to the bottom of the 13th tie. The lefty reaches back, releases. Swing and a miss, strike three. Down goes Triolo. Two strikeouts for Yennesis Cabrera.
On the whole, those guys have both regressed from where they were in 2023. But in their most recent performance, that Friday appearance against the Pirates, those were some really big outs.
Nate Pearson with like two really big innings in that game as well, which was he like ahead of Mayza and Cabrera, which were like huge at the time. Like, that's such a funny game. Like, it was such a marathon. Like, it was just so insane that it just continued and continued. But the Blue Jays were one pitch from losing it in the bottom of the 11th. Like, George Springer against Hunter Stratton was two strikes, two outs. I mean, just a fly ball or a swing and miss or a ground ball away from that game being over. And he comes up with like one of his bigger hits and one of the bigger moments of the season to extend it in the 11th. Then obviously the Blue Jays win it in the 14th. But like, if George Springer hadn't come up in that spot and the Blue Jays had lost that game, and then like they lose two or three against the Pirates and then lose the game against the Orioles on Monday, oh boy, it would be tough out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know what your experience of the Blue Jays fan base is right now, but I think already so many people have kind of checked out. Obviously, if you're still listening to the podcast at this point, you're probably not totally on that list. But yeah, it's been a tough year for Jays fans. That is putting it lightly. And so every loss is a tough one at this point.
Blue Jays bullpen, by the way, is in fact 27th in strikeout rate. You're right, 19.8%. The stat I really like for relievers and for bullpens is strikeout minus walk rate. Like, I think that just tells you a lot about the quality of a bullpen. And the Blue Jays are 26th in strikeout minus walk rate at 10.8%.
And they like that stat too. I mean, they're not going to cite it this year, but in years past, I've heard Blue Jays people say, hey, this is a big stat. This is really important. And right there, 26th, I mean, it's telling.
Boy, I almost had us ending on a positive there at one point, and I've lost it. It's going to be telling, man. It's going to be a telling week against the Orioles. But, you know, then you get the Oakland Athletics on the weekend. So, look, we've only seen one game of this Orioles series. And, like, I think I'm certainly suffering from the recency bias of seeing the way that game played out on Monday. You know, I'm sure we all are a little bit. But I remain open-minded to, you know, the Blue Jays being able to come back and, you know, split this series, go into Oakland and play well, hopefully go into Milwaukee and play well there against a tough team. The thing is, like, the competition for the rest of July, pretty stout. You got Milwaukee, you got a couple series against Cleveland there. Cleveland, like, a really good team this year. You got six games against the Red Sox, who, you know, not phenomenal, but they've been better than Jays this year. And then at the end of the month, you got the Yankees and Astros coming to town, four games each. So we're going to learn something about this team over the next month.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, hopefully people can enjoy along the way. I mean, it's a big ask, right? To enjoy when your team is losing. I don't know. Maybe some people can do it. There's still, like, I mean, Vlad Jr. playing third base. That's kind of fun. But yeah, ultimately, it's a lot more fun if you have a season where the team meets and exceeds expectations. And it's just been so far from that.
Davis Schneider is fun. Like him continuing to have momentous moments, walking off that game in the 14th was like just one of the biggest moments I've seen at Rogers Center in some time. And by the way, like that crowd during that game, because I was doing the sideline during it, they were singing throughout like the 12th, the 13th, the 14th. The people that stuck around, I'm sure some people like were like, okay, I gotta go to bed. Like, I gotta get out of here. I gotta work tomorrow. But you know, the folks up in the 200 level who were like singing throughout that was awesome. That was just like a wicked atmosphere to be around. And I know that the players were into it as well. Like they were hearing it too. So that was a cool moment as well.
And weird coincidence that the individual who drafted Davis Schneider, Steve Sanders, was in the building that day as a member of the Pirates front office, also drafted Alek Manoah, who went on the injured list that day. So odd confluence of events as Davis Schneider's the one to walk it off.
Yeah, Jose Bautista was in the building, obviously a Pittsburgh Pirate traded to the Toronto Blue Jays. You have the new uniforms. Plenty of cool stuff going on with the Blue Jays. That's going to be it for us. But we thank you for listening. We thank Shoal Lee and Nick Andrade for producing. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Regardless of what happens with the Blue Jays over the next 7-ish days, we'll be back to talk to you next time on At the Letters.